This is Sarah Stewart Holland.
This is Beth Silvers.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics,
where we take a different approach to the news. Hi, thank you so much for joining us. Three quarters of our team spent yesterday staring not directly at the sun. We hope that those of you who were in the path of totality also got to experience that unique event. Sarah is going to be back with you here on Friday, joined by her husband, Nicholas, as we continue this period when many members of our team are taking time off with family. We wanted to share today an interesting conversation I had with John Lowy, who is the founder and president of the Global Action on Gun Violence. We are discussing Mexico's lawsuits against several U.S. gun manufacturers. And I'm so excited for you to hear this conversation, because often when we talk about anything touching gun ownership, we hear people saying, we don't need new laws, we just need to enforce existing laws. We don't need to do things that punish responsible gun owners. We need to target people who are purchasing, selling, and using guns illegally. And I think this conversation opens a window into a new way that we might do just those things. But before we hear from John, we wanted to remind you that it is book club week at Pantsuit Politics. And Elise thought it would be nice for you to hear from our book club partner, Lisa McLaughlin, who runs the Bookshelf on Church in Virginia.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
So delighted to be joined by Lisa McLaughlin of the Bookshelf on Church, who we partner with to do our book club. Lisa, thank you so much for joining me. We were so excited when you reached out about reviving the physical element of the book club. I thought maybe it would be lovely for you to just tell people a little bit about yourself, about your small business, about kind of how we started partnering up, I guess like a year and a half ago now.
Yeah. Hi, Elise. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat with you and talk books and the book club. So the Bookshelf on Church is newly renamed. Most of your subscribers who have bought the book club box will know it as the Bookshelf Irvington, which has been the name for the last year and a half or so. It started as a novel model bookstore. And when I reached out to you guys, I had just opened. And it was a partnership with a coffee shop in our very, very small town of 400 people in Virginia. And I just had been a follower of yours forever and loved the previous book club box. And so I thought, what better opportunity to pitch a partnership? And you guys were so kind and so receptive. And so we started working together back. I think we've done 3 or 4 boxes now. And it's been a learning experience for me. It's really helped my business. It's helped me grow financially, but it's also just given me opportunities to connect with publishers and authors and, you know, all the elements of being a bookstore owner.
Amazing. You know, we love bookstore owners, but really just anyone who's in the book world, right? Librarians, booksellers. I think probably people who love to read, that somewhere deep down in the corner of your soul, there's a part of you that just wants to be a librarian or open a bookstore.
It is a dream.
So we love that we get to partner with you. And basically the way that that looks in real life is that our team decides on a theme and the books. And then we come to you and say, hey, Lisa, here's what we're going to do for this next iteration of the book club. This is the theme. These are the books. So for instance, this winter, our theme was Company Towns. We read The Big Break by Ben Terris about insiders in DC. We read Her Country by Marissa Moss about Nashville and Texas and women in country music. This upcoming box, which is on sale to premium members this week, plug there. this upcoming box kind of continues that theme of the politics of place. We're reading 2 novels that were suggested by listeners and members of the book club, The Displacements by Bruce Holsinger and The Sentence by Louise Erdrich. So when we come to you with those books and our ideas, what does it look like for you from there? What's the process for you to kind of put together the physical version of the book club?
So there's a couple steps and, you know, a lot of it is logistical, so it's not super sexy, but...
I love logistics. Logistics are very sexy. That's my whole job. Yes, please.
Not sexy, but very important, right? So I reach out to my publisher contacts. I have reps at each of the major publishers, you know, depending on who the books are published by. And I prep for a large order. So I want to make sure that I have all the elements of the box before I start packing for efficiency's sake and to hopefully get them out the door pretty quickly to people who have purchased them. And the other piece is that I throw in some other fun gift items. And as a small business, I really focus on supporting fellow small business owners. So I work with, you know, reps or on some of these networking sites, I can get recommendations from other booksellers of products their customers like. There's a website called Fair that I use a lot that has small batch, small businesses, just making really great, great items. So I have a lot of fun with that. I think it's really fun to kind of pick, you know, a new set of things that we haven't put in a box before and, you know, that I hope are just a fun treat with the books. And I have had custom boxes made. So we had a logo made, this kind of a joint logo between us and the Bookshelf Irvington. And that goes on a box that's custom cut for these size of books and gifts. So basically, it's a lot of gathering materials. And then I line it all up, and currently that's been in my home office, which, you know, I've outgrown a little bit, to be honest. But as I'm opening a storefront in May, which is very exciting, I will have a whole area to set up the elements of the box and really get them, you know, packaged up, hopefully more efficiently. I looked back at our initial emails when we started this, and we had our first call in December of 2022. And as you know, but I'll share with your listeners, I was diagnosed with breast cancer just 3 weeks later. And it was obviously a shock, but it really threw a wrench in my plans to get these boxes out and efficiently organized for us. And so you guys have been so good at just being protective of my time and energy as a small business and a solo business owner. And going through that, I was, you know, put back a bit in some of the shipping deadlines that I had set for myself. And so I think the storefront will really help me kind of expand that operation, I hope, and provide good service to your guys' clients and mine.
Yeah, you've been amazing at being so communicative and on top of things in the midst of having this like very intense personal journey. So I don't want to like not recognize that, that it's been, you took on this big new thing and then also like life threw a big thing at you.
You just never know.
You never know, right? And we do, like, it's so important to us to, as we partner with you, both support and help grow and expand your small business and also put up guardrails to like protect your time, protect your profit margins. It's important to us. The way that this partnership is working is we are not taking any portion of the profit from those physical boxes. So that is all for Lisa and her small business. And then the drive for us is that the content that we create around the book box is for our premium members. So the people who have paid subscriptions to our extra content, that's over there for us. Also, if you are a premium member, you get access to purchase one of the limited run curated book boxes that Lisa puts together. That's part of also protecting Lisa's time and energy. She makes a limited number of these boxes, and when they're sold out, they're sold out. And so premium members get first chance to buy those based on their tier level. So highest tier starts on Monday this week. That was yesterday. Next level tier is Tuesday, et cetera, et cetera. So by the end of the week, hopefully we'll be sold out of these summer book club boxes and like ready to go. And they'll be in people's mailboxes in June. Is that right, Lisa?
Yeah, that's the goal. We should be on schedule as planned.
Amazing.
Hopefully sooner.
Well, we're super excited. Thank you so much. Is there anything else that people should know about the book boxes, the book club, anything that we haven't talked about?
Yeah, I mean, I think the other piece I would share just about, obviously, indies are all different, which is what I think is great about indie bookstores, is no one is the same. You know, we are in a very rural area in Virginia, kind of a collection of small towns, and we don't have an indie or even a big box store within 50 miles of us.
Wow.
So I'm taking over what was our last bookstore here that was open for 50 years. And the owner just retired and sold the building. And I think everyone in town is really excited. So I wanted to share too, part of our mission here, because we are in a rural area, we are considered a book desert in certain parts of our county. And so one of my philanthropic missions is to get books to kids and those imprisoned, because it pains me to think of kids not growing up with, you know, age and language appropriate books. But my kids grew up with that. And so that was sort of not a question. But to start learning more about book deserts as I got into this job, it was really important to me to think, like, how can I create that access? Even if it's not necessarily, you know, we have a wonderful library. So maybe it's even funding them and partnering with them, doing events with them. And then the other piece is, you know, getting books to prisons and those imprisoned in our state, because that is a population that I really feel is often forgotten and has lost a lot of freedom. But I think the freedom to read and to learn and to continue to grow is really important. And I have heard stories of, you know, prison book clubs where, or jail book clubs where the kids at home who are separated from maybe their parent are reading the same book, and they get to connect, you know, on the phone later about whatever they were reading. It's just one of those things that makes me think this is the power of a book. And as much as it is just paper and print, in some ways, there's just so many wonderful things out there to read and to be able to target those populations that maybe really are limited and their access to that stuff is one of my big missions. So I'm really excited to get the store opened and have a section where you can pick from, you know, a wall of what they've requested or what we're, you know, maybe offering to send them. And you can just throw it in your basket at checkout and continue to support those missions here in Virginia.
Oh, I love that so much. I think there's something so special about the way a bookstore can become not only a third space in a community, but also a community connection point, and bring awareness and resources to programs exactly like what you're talking about. So we love what you're doing. We're excited that we get to continue to partner with you. Thank you for making the physical aspect of our book club real. We're super excited for this next round, summer novels that are about the politics of place. I think people are going to love them. We're pumped about it. So make sure if you are interested in getting one of these curated book boxes that Lisa puts together, that you head over to Patreon ASAP, become a premium member of the Spice Cabinet, and get the link for your opportunity to buy one of these limited run boxes. Thank you so much, Lisa.
You know how you learn to really appreciate how good your products are? Leave town and get stuck with whatever shampoo is in the hotel. I take Pros and their custom hair products for granted, y'all. Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. I never found beauty products that really understood my needs. But ever since I switched to custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I've noticed so many benefits. My thin hair is moisturized but not weighed down, and my waves have never looked better. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/pantsuit. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/pantsuit. That's PROSE.com/pantsuit.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I'm 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look." And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off. In previous episodes, I have outed myself as a bed-making fanatic. I am very serious about my bed being an oasis, a gift to Chad and me as we crawl into it at the end of a long day. So I want to return to how much I love my Boll & Branch sheets. With Boll & Branch sheets, you can discover a new level of softness. The sheets are made from 100% organic cotton in a buttery, breathable weave that truly gets softer every time you wash them. And you know that I like to do that once a week, so my Boll & Branch are rapidly aging like a fine wine. The sheets look great. I have them in a beautiful slate color. They stay put, so making my bed is quick and easy. They are a bestseller for a reason. The signature sheets feel incredible on night one. They are loved by millions of sleepers, and they come with a 30-night worry-free guarantee. Sleep better at night with the softest sheets from Boll & Branch. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code PANTSUIT at bollandbranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com, promo code PANTSUIT. Exclusions apply. See site for details. John Lowy is the founder and president of the Global Action on Gun Violence and has over 25 years of experience advocating against gun violence and for strong gun policies. He is co-counsel representing the government of Mexico in lawsuits filed in Massachusetts and Arizona against gun manufacturers. Now, as we have discussed here too many times, the United States has a unique gun culture and a despairingly unique epidemic of gun violence. But the world is interconnected, and our gun problems don't exist in a vacuum. We are exporting our gun violence to Mexico via the trafficking of over 500,000 guns from the U.S. to Mexico every year. And Mexico is now coming into our court system claiming that gun manufacturers know about that trafficking and that they profit from it, and that there are things that they could be doing to prevent it. So here is John Lowy to share more about these lawsuits. John Lowy, thanks for joining me, and congratulations on a couple of big legal victories that we're going to talk about today. I want to start by asking you about the general field that Congress has created around trying to sue gun manufacturers. So tell us a little bit about the Protection of Lawful Commerce in Arms Act.
Sure. Well, in 2005, the NRA and the rest of the gun lobby pushed for this special protection from civil liability, which became the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. And it's a federal law that gives the gun industry protection from lawsuits that no other people, no other industry in America has. So pretty extraordinary that probably the most dangerous product on the consumer market, guns, is in some ways the least protected. But that's been an impediment to a lot of lawsuits against the gun industry in the past 15, 20 years, but there are ways around it. And Mexico's lawsuits are two good examples of that.
Tell us a little bit about some of the previous efforts to find ways around that act. So the saying goes that this act makes sense because if a drunk driver hits and kills a person, the car manufacturer is not responsible. I think that analogy is flawed in a lot of ways, but useful as we try to understand this. So I would love to hear about previous attempts to deal with this act in litigation before you started partnering with Mexico.
Sure. And going back to the analogy, one of the ways the analogy doesn't work is when you talk about cars or any other sort of product, Congress doesn't step in and set the rules. We trust judges and the court system to decide, should General Motors be liable? Should someone who makes baseball bats be liable for an attack? And they decide things in a reasonable way. Same thing can happen with guns, but of course, Congress stepped in because of the power of the gun lobby. But there have been a number of cases, and I've been involved in a lot of them, that have held that gun companies can be liable under certain exceptions within PLCA, the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. And the probably the most prominent, most used exception is what's called the predicate exception, which essentially says if you're a gun company and you knowingly violate the law and that causes harm, you don't get protected. I mean, this law is called the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. If you engage in unlawful commerce and arms, we're not protecting you. And a lot of cases, you know, come within that, including Mexico's lawsuits. And you know, the Sandy Hook case is another example of using that exception, where the court there held that the marketing of assault weapons in this way that appealed to young people that are sort of in the demographic and type of potential mass shooters, that violated a state unfair business practice law. So that was a violation of law. So that company did not get protected under PLCA.
Does this kind of put it in line with opioids cases, other manufacture and sale of lawful products where the manufacturer is aware that they're being used for unlawful purposes and it is complicit in their use in unlawful purposes because it's so profitable?
Yeah, there are certainly some similarities. And, you know, I think it's important to step back and talk about what the allegations are in Mexico's cases and basically how guns are distributed in the U.S. For over 20 years, U.S. law enforcement, particularly the ATF, has said that most crime guns are sold by a very small percentage of gun dealers. Okay, about 5% of gun dealers sell about 90% of crime guns. About 90% of gun dealers sell no crime guns. So you have a lot of gun dealers that are selling guns the right way. They're not part of the problem, but you have this fairly small group of bad actors that are basically the entire problem. And you got manufacturers who are using those bad gun dealers to sell their products. And the federal government has, over the past 20 years or so, said to manufacturers, you shouldn't be supplying these bad dealers, and you should be having standards for your dealers. Make sure that they're screening their purchasers so they're not selling to gun traffickers and straw buyers. And unfortunately, manufacturers have refused to do what the federal government and, in fact, people in their own industry have told them to do. And that's how guns get to the criminal market. And it's how guns get to the cartels in Mexico and to the gangs in Haiti and Jamaica and elsewhere.
So tell us about Mexico and how the idea of Mexico as plaintiff came together.
Sure. Well, there's been a huge problem for a number of years of these dangerous practices of the gun industry supplying the cartels in Mexico. It's very hard for cartels or other criminals to get guns in Mexico. There's one gun store in the entire country. It's on a military base. They have very strong laws. So what the cartels do is they work with gun traffickers in the U.S. And those traffickers go to these gun dealers who are the irresponsible ones, are the ones who are more than happy to sell 5 assault weapons, 10 assault weapons, you know, huge amounts of ammunition, where it should be obvious that that buyer is a straw buyer or a gun trafficker. But you have these dealers who sell those guns and that ammunition, and that's trafficked across the border to the cartels. So, you know, that's the problem. And it's leading to, you know, huge violence in Mexico that drives migration. It enables the fentanyl trafficking. So it's a big problem on both sides of the border. And basically what happened is after the El Paso mass shooting of the Walmart in El Paso, where you had a man who essentially was trying to kill as many Mexicans as he could. His goal was to then cross the border and kill Mexicans on the southern side of the border. And the Mexican government wanted to do something about this problem. And ultimately, it led to litigation that they brought against gun manufacturers and then later a lawsuit against gun dealers.
And there are lawsuits in Arizona and Massachusetts. Can you tell us about the selection of those jurisdictions?
The first lawsuit that Mexico filed, and I'm privileged to be co-counsel for the government of Mexico in both those cases, the first one was filed in federal court in Massachusetts against a number of gun manufacturers. One of those manufacturers is Smith & Wesson, and they are based in Massachusetts, so that's why the case was filed there. And the other suit is against a few gun dealers, all of them in Arizona, and so that case is in federal court in Tucson.
So for listeners who are not in civil court every day, you have crossed a really big hurdle in these cases by surviving a motion to dismiss because of the Protection of Lawful Commerce and Arms Act. So can you tell us a little bit about the court's acceptance of this predicate exception as a possibility, and then what discovery will look like here?
The court, you know, put the two cases together because they're similar rulings. In both cases, the courts, one of them was the First Circuit Court of Appeals in the Massachusetts case against the manufacturers. The other was a federal judge in Arizona. They both held that Mexico's allegations supported the predicate violation. That is, that Mexico had adequately alleged that the defendants knowingly violated gun laws by aiding and abetting illegal gun sales in various respects, and that those violations proximately caused harm to Mexico, according to the allegations. So because of that, both of the courts held this special protection law does not protect these companies against liability. So the cases are now moving forward. Actually, in the manufacturer case, the defendants have said they are going to seek Supreme Court review, and they're going to file a cert petition in April. I personally think it's very, very unlikely that the Supreme Court is going to take that case. So I think we'll be back down in trial court in a few months there. In the Arizona case, we are off to the races in discovery. So that's the stage we're at now, where we will be entitled to get evidence, documents, records, emails, live testimony under oath of the defendants and experts, and Mexico will be proving its case to ultimately present to a jury.
Why do you think the Supreme Court won't take it?
Well, I mean, the Supreme Court has, you know, rules about what sort of cases it takes, and, you know, whether there's a circuit split or issues that have percolated a lot in the lower courts and are ripe for Supreme Court review, and a number of other criteria. none of them apply to this case. So it really is not a ripe case for a Supreme Court review, certainly not at this stage.
So tell me about discovery and what you expect to uncover. Mexico had to allege with some specificity that the manufacturers really do understand how these guns are getting to cartels, and that, in fact, the manufacturers are trying to make products that are attractive to the cartels. So what do you hope to find as you request documents and conduct depositions?
Well, I'm not going to, you know, open up our whole playbook of sure. You know, how we're going to prove our case. But, you know, in both cases, we go into great detail about the practices of the gun industry that we believe should hold them accountable, and also particular examples as just, you know, samples of the sorts of gun trafficking that you see. And those are the sorts of things where you have a gun trafficker going into a gun store, buying multiple assault rifles, buying hundreds of rounds of ammunition, in some cases buying 50 caliber sniper rifles, which are guns that have a range of about a mile. They can shoot through reinforced concrete. They have been used by the cartels to shoot down military helicopters. They're true military weapons. And you have gun dealers selling them, and often selling them as part of a bulk sale. And so those transactions, it's obvious that those persons are traffickers. And then on the manufacturer's point, you have this long history of decades of information about there being these problem gun dealers and of manufacturers being told, you shouldn't deal with these guys and you should have standards of who you use to sell your guns at retail. And they've refused. So, I mean, all that's set out in our complaints, and I would recommend listeners to go to actiononguns.org, our website. And you can download copies of the complaints and see that. And, you know, we intend to, one, prove those allegations, which are quite compelling, but then also certainly hear from the defendants about what are their defenses, what are their explanations of why they sell guns and distribute guns and market them the way that they do. I think all of that will be, you know, extremely interesting for everyone to hear, and ultimately, hopefully, in a public trial.
One defense that you know you'll have to contend with is causation. This came up in the First Circuit's ruling on the motion to dismiss. So I'm interested in hearing about causation from your perspective, because I think this is an issue that comes up just in like Second Amendment conversation, right? Where people like that car analogy. They say, yes, it's the responsibility of the person with the gun as to whether they use it lawfully or not. And there's a flavor of that when the defendants say, well, we sell to dealers who then sell to this person. And then it goes here and it's, you know, 18 steps down before Mexico suffers any harm. So can you talk a little bit about that?
I mean, the fact is, under the law, there can be multiple causes to an injury. So the fact that you can point the finger at other people or companies that played a part in causing this injury doesn't mean that you're off the hook. I mean, of course, somebody who, a criminal or cartel member who pulls the trigger and uses that gun, of course, they are at fault, at great fault. But that does not mean that if you're a gun dealer selling to a obvious trafficker who you've reason to know is going to be supplying criminals and potentially supplying cartel members, that you're off the hook. In fact, it makes even more responsibility imposed on dealers and manufacturers if they know that there are these, you know, cartels and criminals on the U.S. side of the border out there. They've got a great obligation to prevent that from happening. So it really is just, it's a case of shared responsibility. I mean, you know, bring up the car analogy. Well, there are times, in fact, where somebody drives drunk and drives a car into a tree. Of course, they have responsibility, but there are times where the car manufacturer can be also responsible, if there weren't safety features that would have prevented that foreseeable injury. Again, if there's foreseeable risks and you're a manufacturer or seller, you've got to use reasonable care to prevent that from happening.
I was trying to think about what would be analogous on the part of a car manufacturer if you know that drunk driving happens a lot and you decide that there's some kind of profit motive attached to more drunk driving. Do you put like a bottle opener in the dashboard or, you know, shot glass size cup holder? Like, they're taking affirmative steps to facilitate the bad action, the illegal action, not just putting the product into the stream of commerce.
Yeah. And you know, you mentioned opioids earlier, and there's a old Supreme Court case where the court held a criminal conviction of a drug manufacturer and distributor because the way it was selling drugs in bulk, in that case to a licensed doctor, should have indicated that that doctor was actually trafficking some of those drugs on the side. So to me, that's very similar. You know, you've got a licensed, you know, physician who is allowed to buy drugs and does not have any limits on how many it can buy under the law. But there can be circumstances where, you know, you've got to realize what's happening downstream.
And the seriousness of the drug has been relevant in some of those cases, right? This isn't Tylenol, it's morphine. And the First Circuit seemed to find that compelling here, too, that the responsibility is heightened by the deadliness of these weapons. And some of the features that you mentioned earlier would seem, you know, this is, we're not talking about someone's granddad's revolver.
Absolutely. I mean, and if you're selling assault rifles, and certainly if you're selling these, you know, sniper rifles or selling guns in bulk, you've got to pay very special attention. And you know, we're not just making this up. Again, the U.S. federal government has said these same things to the gun industry. People within the gun industry over the years have occasionally spoken up and said, wait a minute, we're supplying bad gun dealers and we're supplying bad people with our guns. We should clean up our act. And those voices have been, you know, shut down.
So we've talked about basically duty breach and causation. Let's talk about damages. What does Mexico say needs to be redressed here?
Well, I mean, we're not there yet in the cases. We'll be proving them. But I mean, the damage that Mexico has suffered as a result of this crime gun pipeline are you know, extraordinary. You know, there's all sorts of damage to Mexican society, economically. People have been killed, as I mentioned, when there was a Mexican military helicopter shot out of the sky. That was damage to people, to property, and far beyond that. But I would also note that there is damage on this side of the border as well. I mean, this harm comes back to us. I mean, when 70,000 Americans are dying from fentanyl overdoses. I mean, a lot of that fentanyl is being trafficked because of U.S. guns. That is really enabling the cartels to engage in their criminal enterprises. Migration is spurred by violence, largely cartel violence with U.S. guns. So if you care about migration issues, if you care about fentanyl, if you care about the going beyond Mexico to the crisis in Haiti and elsewhere, you know, you should care about stopping this crime gun pipeline that's enabling all of these crimes and violence.
So, bigger picture, I know that your organization has come in part from hearing from countries around the world their reactions to our gun laws, to the level of gun ownership that exists in the United States. I would love for you to tell us some of what you've heard that's really striking.
First, let me step back and just give a little bit of background on myself, which sort of plays into this story. I spent 25 years at a large U.S. Gun violence prevention organization. And a lot of that was representing victims of gun violence in litigation against the gun industry. And, you know, ultimately, even though we had some success, ultimately, I was frustrated by the lack of progress in the U.S. because there's such political constraints on the gun issue. And that's why I left to create Global Action on Gun Violence, which is representing Mexico and working with other countries as well. And I give that background because what I've seen is when you step out of the U.S., where there's this, you know, tremendous political constraint to any conversation about guns, and you talk to people in Jamaica and in Trinidad and in Mexico and in Canada, they have a different perspective. They have a perspective of how can you in the U.S. do nothing when there is mass slaughter of children and adults in movie theaters and schools and workplaces. It's inconceivable to them. And so that, to me, leads to bold action, like Mexico has taken in its litigation, and much bolder action than we see domestically in the U.S. And that really is sort of why I created Global Action on Gun Violence, is because I saw there was a great potential to impact not just the spread of gun violence throughout the region, but also to reduce gun violence in the United States.
You've mentioned a couple of times that there are practices that manufacturers can change that it sounds like would not materially disrupt gun ownership for the average voter who cares a lot about this topic. Can you unravel that a little bit more for us?
Yes. And you know, the fact is, and I've said that, you know, most gun dealers are responsible business people who care about guns getting in the right hands and not the wrong hands. And they're not selling any crime guns, just as most gun owners are responsible gun owners. We may have disagreements about all sorts of things, but they do take the responsibility of gun ownership seriously. And in fact, I've talked to many of those gun owners over the years, and they've said, you know, if they're at a gun store and they see two people who are in the store together and picking out a whole bunch of guns, and they know what's going on. They know those are straw purchasers, you know, and they don't want that sale to happen, but, you know, but it does. So, you know, the sorts of best practices are really pretty simple. I mean, there are well-known indicators of gun trafficking and straw buying. Guns in bulk, repeatedly going back to the store to buy more guns. Two people coming into the store together. Sometimes checking your phone for texts from the actual buyer. You know, and there's others. But the responsible gun dealers have steps to prevent those sorts of sales. And that's why they're not selling any crime guns. But it's the irresponsible ones that, you know, welcome these high risk and obvious bad practices.
So my last question, as someone who has spent so much of your career working on gun violence, if you could ask Congress for one legislative change that you think would really make a difference, what would it be?
You know, I mean, many people in the gun violence prevention movement would say universal background checks. I don't think that is the answer I would give. I would say really comprehensive, strong regulation of the gun industry to prevent the bad actors, to make sure that the bad actors can't get licenses, that they're shut down, that they're prosecuted if they need to be, that manufacturers have standards that they're required to follow about which gun dealers they use, and make sure those gun dealers are have safe practices and have employees who are trained. And if that happened, then guns would be sold to law-abiding people who want them, but traffickers would have a much harder time getting guns, and straw buyers, and that's where virtually all the crime guns come from. So if you had that, you would have crime reduced significantly in the U.S., but also the crime gun pipeline to Mexico would be shut down, and the pipeline to Haiti and Jamaica and other countries would also be shut down.
Well, John, thank you so much for your time and for your work in these lawsuits. We will link the complaints so that people can read them for themselves and see this compelling case that you've laid out. Best of luck. I hope you'll come back and tell us how it went on the other side of these suits.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much to John. Next up, we will end, as we always do, talking about something outside of politics. And today, I have a very special guest for that conversation.
Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful, Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. You guys, I love my Aura frames. I have one in my office. I have one in my kitchen. I have given one as a housewarming gift. I have given one as Mother's Day, Father's Day. They are the most amazing gifts because this app is a game changer, in my personal opinion, in digital frames. It makes it so, so easy to get the pictures on there and even videos. It plays like you're in Harry Potter, you guys. It is the best. I love mine so much. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15. Well, I have a very special guest joining me as we end with what's on our minds outside of politics today. Who's here with me?
Hello.
It's Ellen. Ellen, how old are you now?
I am 8 3/4.
8 3/4. And what grade are you in?
3rd grade.
Very good. And I said to you, would you be willing to come chat with me on the podcast? And you said basically always. And I ask you what was on your mind right now. And what was your idea for a topic?
It was stress.
I think that's a good topic because everybody feels stress.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
So at school, every week, you have a set of things that you're supposed to do, and you have to finish it by Friday at the end of the week. And if you do finish it, then you get to play, like, fun games on your computer called Free Choice Friday. And I have a lot of stress on me every week that I have to finish that. And it's kind of hard to keep up with them because my brain is all like, Helen, you're not going to finish it. And it's kind of stressful to deal with that. And there's a whole bunch of other things too, though.
Well, you want to start with the big rocks? That's what you're talking about, right?
Yeah.
So Ellen's teacher every week has them complete a certain number of lessons on computer programs about reading and math.
And working with a group, we have a journal that we put in journal entries every week, and we have to do two of them. And then we have these little papers that are math. They're called simple solutions. They're kind of like our quote-unquote morning work.
Okay. And why do we call them your big rocks?
Because they're important. And
right.
Big rocks, when you're learning about them in school, big rocks are important things and little rocks are not as important things. Like,
Have you all done the exercise with the jar where you have to put the big rocks in first and then put the little rocks in to fit around the big rocks? You can't go the other way.
Well, not fitting around, there's just two jars. And one of them says big rocks and one of them says little rocks. And there, you draw little rocks in and then you put words on them. And one jar is your big rock and one is your little rock.
Okay. So your big important things that you have to get done every week. You're right. I have observed that that list of things seems to create stress for you every single week, even though every single week you get it done.
Yeah.
So what do you notice about that feeling that you're worried that you're not going to get it done versus how you feel once you have finished up?
Well, I definitely think that I feel much better once I have gotten at least a majority of them done than having only, like, let's say, 4, and I'm supposed to finish 8 of this math program.
Okay.
And I'm scared that I'm not going to get it done.
Do you enjoy any parts of your big rocks?
What I really do enjoy is I do enjoy my journal entries because I am a big writer. Like, I love to write. I love to use my imagination with writing. It's one of my favorite things, and I really enjoy journal entries. And my teacher, like, grades them, and she usually puts, like, little comments or a star. And I really like that because I like to know if I'm actually doing well in my journals.
Do you have a least favorite part of your big rocks?
Honestly, I actually think that my least favorite part is my computer programs because I'm mostly worried that I'm not going to get my computer programs done.
And why is that, you think?
Well, because my computer programs, one of them is called Reading Plus. So there's a specific amount of reading that you have to do and a specific amount of vocabulary you have to do. And it's kind of depends. You take a little placement test to see, like, how many you need to do for each. I need to do 6, 3 reading, 3 vocabulary. That's kind of a lot for me. And then in math is a program called Dreambox, and you have to do 8 lessons. And that's a little tough because in, like, first grade and kindergarten, we only had to do 5. And that put much less pressure on me than it does now.
Well, I'm asking you about what you enjoy and don't enjoy because one technique that people use to tackle a big list of tasks, like your big rocks are, is to prioritize based on what they like and don't like. Some people say, okay, I'm going to do the things I love first because I'll probably get through those fast. Other people say, I want to start with what I don't like and knock it out. They'll say that's like eating the frog. They'll say the things I don't like are the frogs and I'm just going to get through those.
Yeah, that's what I do usually.
What do you do? You usually start with what you
don't
like?
I usually start with like all my things that I think are difficult or I just don't enjoy that much and I do them. And then usually I end up finishing my journals last minute and then I get those done and then I turn it in and everything's fine.
So another stress management technique that I use sometimes is I think of what I'm worried about and I close my eyes and I imagine that happening. I say, okay, maybe I get to Friday morning and I have not finished my big rocks. What would that mean?
Well, usually I'm worried about not getting my big rocks done because I'm worried that all my friends are, and I won't get to spend time with my friends, and they'll be done, and it'll be upsetting for me because they get to do fun things. I think it's adding a little bit of jealousy in there. That happens a lot to me. Jealousy is a hard feeling, so.
Jealousy is a very hard feeling, and I think it's wise that you notice that that's maybe what's causing some of this stress. But you know what? Stress is a feeling too, and it's also a hard feeling. So I just think you might consider what would really be the worst thing if I don't get my big rocks done. I might feel jealous of my friends, and that's a hard feeling.
I think the worst thing would be that I miss out on doing fun things.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I think about it, I guess that isn't so bad. But we also have this thing called a WIG tracker, where we track what we're doing and if we're getting our computer programs done. It's a Google Slideshow, and every week you fill in if you finish both of them. So I have all of mine filled in.
And you don't want to get behind on that.
Yeah, and I don't want to get behind on that because that's a part of my grade.
Is WIG wildly important goals?
Yeah.
Is that what that stands for? Well, I think it's really great that you want to do your very best. I also want you to know, though, that doing your very best every single time is hard. And it does create that feeling of pressure.
Hard.
And sometimes we have to give ourselves a little bit of grace, too.
I think that sometimes I want to be the best at everything. And I know that is impossible. Really, it could be, but it's just really, really, really difficult. And I think I should stop trying to do that because I think that's making me feel more stressed than I usually would.
Are there any things you have found that help when you have this worried feeling?
Usually, I kind of close my eyes and I count to 10
mm-hmm.
for a minute. And then I breathe a couple times. And then I think of what will happen when I'm done. And when I'm done, I have fun. So when I think of all those things, I feel more motivated because it's something that I want and I want to achieve my goals.
That's nice, Ellen. Is there anything that Dad and I can do to help you when you are feeling this stress?
Well, usually when I do feel the stress, you guys tell me that every week I do get it done.
Is that helpful or not helpful?
That is helpful because it reminds me that I'm smart. I'm good at things. And my big rocks are one of those things that I am good at. So I just remember that.
Is there anything that we do that's not helpful to you?
I don't know. Okay. I can't really think of any right now because you guys don't really do anything that's not exactly helpful. Dad makes jokes about it a lot of the time. That isn't exactly helpful. But I guess it's fine because he's just trying to be funny.
Yeah. Well, we just both look at you and think you're really succeeding. And we don't want you to feel an unreasonable level of pressure because you're in the third grade. You know what I mean? And you got a lot of life in front of you. And at every stage, there are going to be more things that create this buildup of pressure where you want to be the best or you think, oh, I've got to get this done. Or if someone does better than I do on this or goes faster, it might make me jealous. So what we would rather see than you getting your big rocks done by Thursday every week is you being able to manage that feeling of pressure.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? What would it mean to give yourself some grace if you missed it on Thursday one week and had to work on it on Friday while your friends were playing games? How would you know that you are still okay?
Honestly, I think I would still remember what you guys tell me every single week that I always get it done. Just knowing that I still can get it done. I don't think playing games doesn't matter as much is my grade and how I do in school. And getting done computer programs is part of my grade, and I want my grade to be good. So I kind of just remember that I still can do it, and playing games isn't as important anymore.
And Ellen, what if we went to the very worst case? What if you got to the end of the day on Friday and you didn't finish your big rocks for the week?
Honestly, I don't know. Maybe I would go home and feel probably sad. And I would eat some Belveeta cookies and make me feel better.
Well, sometimes a snack break is called for. But you would still be okay, right? You would just go back the next week and start again.
Yeah, like a A fresh start. That's one of my favorite things.
A fresh start.
Think of HelloFresh. HelloFresh.
Well, Ellen, thank you for talking to me about stress.
It happens a lot. Trust me.
It does. Well, I hope that you know that you never have to feel that stress by yourself. We can always talk about it.
Yeah, that feels good to be able to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think you're pretty great.
But as a Gemini, I have researched, and Geminis usually try to hide their feelings. I think that's true sometimes about me.
You do?
Yeah. Sometimes I either do that or I just don't want to talk about it.
You often tell me you don't want to talk, but then when you do, what happens?
I feel better.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for talking to me today. High five. Love you. Thanks to John Lowy. Thanks to Elise and Lisa. Thanks to my daughter, Ellen. And thanks to all of you for spending time with us today. All the information about our book club will be in the show notes. We hope you will join us there. Sarah will be back with you on Friday. Until then, have the best week available to you.
Pantsu Politics is produced by Studio D Podcast Production.
Elise Knapp is our managing director. Maggie Pinton is our director of community engagement.
Xander Singh is the composer of our theme music with inspiration from original work by Dante Lima.
Our show is listener supported. Special thanks to our executive producers.
Martha Brunitsky.
Allie Edwards.
Janice Elliott.
Sarah Greenup.
Julie Haller.
Tiffany Hassler.
Emily Holiday.
Katie Johnson.
Katina Zuganellis-Kasling.
Barry Kaufman.
Catherine Vollmer.
Lori Ladau.
Lily McClure.
Linda Daniel.
The Hutchins!
Tracy Putoff.
Sarah Ralph.
Jeremy Sequoia.
Katie Steigers.
Karen True.
Annika Uvaline.
Nick and Elisa Vallelli.
Amy Whited.
Emily Helen Olson.
Lee Shea McDonough.
Morgan McHugh.
Jen Ross.
Sabrina Drigo.
Becca Dorval.
Christina Cordoraro.
Shannon Frawley.
Jessica Whitehead.
Samantha Chalmers.
Crystal Kemp.
The Lisa family!
The Adair family.
Jeff Davis, Melinda Johnston, Michelle Wood, Nicole Berkless, Paula Bremer, and Tim Miller.